Today we finish up with the section on the Finance Committee. And there are several noteworthy things that have happened over the past week. Harvard and MIT are suing the Trump administration for its guidelines regarding international students, something that will have a big impact on higher education. The CDC has come under fire for their recommendations regarding the opening of schools. COVID cases continue to rise, and Trump is now flexible on his convention format. Got my rabbit ears up when I say flexible. The Supreme Court has also issued several interesting decisions over the past week. One that opens the door for states to punish electoral voters that refuse to vote in the direction of the popular election. Another that rejects Trump's claim of absolute immunity from criminal investigation. And another that essentially sent Congress's request for enforcement of its financial subpoenas to a lower court. The news cycles have shifted away from the protests that seem to have lost focus and back onto other matters, despite a number of hangings of black people, some of which have been deemed suicides. But we here at Lessons from the Screen have not lost focus. That's why this episode of Lessons from the Screen is going to continue to ask the question, the hell I'ma do with that? This is Lessons from the Screen.
John Boy.
This is Lessons from the Screen, the show where we give you a review of whether or not any particular information that you can get from any particular screen of any particular kind is worth your time. We waste our time, our energy, and our brain power so that you don't have to. As always, Lessons from the Screen is sponsored by PAX, Inc., a black activist advocacy and think tank organization with the purpose of increasing the quality of life of black people in America through a shift and through a education, culture shift, and economics. You can check them out at www.pactsinc.org. That's PAXinc.org. Go ahead, leave a review. Leave a comment, tell a friend to tell a friend, take a survey, do whatever you can to support them because they are doing whatever they can to support you. Make sure you go to the Learning Center, check out a book, and you know, if you're shopping with Amazon Smile, make sure that you got PAXinc selected as the charity that you want to support. Let's get right into it. Today we're going to be finishing subtitle D of the HR 748 CARES Act. This is part 12 of the series, and we are bringing it in. So let's go ahead and bring it in. So like I said, we are going to finish subtitle D, Finance Committee Part 2. This is going to be 3711 through 3720. And then we'll be hopping onto a new section next week unless something crazy happens that I feel like we need to put this series on hold in order to cover whatever crazy thing happened. But barring anything super crazy happening, we're going to be finishing this thing up. So, Section 3711 is titled Increasing Access to Post-Acute Care During the Emergency Period. And it actually does not have the in there. It has during emergency period. But I'm putting the in there for all of these things because it's weird to read it without it in there. So whatever the case might be, that's what we gonna do. So the first thing that this section does is it mandates that the Secretary of Health and Human Services waive the rule that requires patients of an inpatient rehabilitation facility receive at least 15 hours of therapy per week. This 3-hour rule gives patients 3 hours of therapy a day, 5 days a week at least. The second part of this section is another waiver under the direction of the Secretary of Health and Human Services, and this is a waiver for the site-neutral payment rate and a waiver to the 50% rule of long-term care hospitals. The site-neutral payment rate is a payment that long-term care hospitals get for discharges that do not meet specific clinical criteria, and it tends to be a lower rate. The 50% rule is a rule that governs the payments to facilities that do not have a discharge payment percentage for the period that is at least 50%. Now, both of these waivers are intended to allow hospitals to treat more patients by providing the resources they need for cases that might not otherwise qualify for the resources provided. And as the title says, this is in effect during the emergency period. Now, Section 3712 is titled Revising Payment Rates for Durable Medical Equipment under the Medicare Program through the duration of the emergency period. Now, this pretty much also does what the title says it does. It prevents a scheduled decrease in payments for durable medical equipment for the duration of the emergency declaration. The goal here is to help people remain in their homes after transitioning from the hospital. We're talking about things like wheelchairs, canes, crutches, walkers, ventilators, nebulizers, and other things of that nature. It's a pretty comprehensive list in terms of items that allow people to be able to live outside of the hospital environment. And if you want to know everything that's considered DME, you should definitely look that up. Google, Yahoo, Bing, all of these other search engines, they are your friend. It would be a bit much for me to get into here, given the nature of what we're doing. Section 3713, not to be confused with 371313, everybody in their hands with their hands up in the tree. Or not. Anyways, Section 3713, coverage of the COVID-19 vaccine under Part B of the Medicare program without any cost sharing. Now, this section basically makes the COVID vaccine free permanently. Well, that's the intention. It eliminates cost sharing permanently. But that doesn't mean that a clever corporation or person won't find a way around it if they searched a bit. So then we move on to Section 3714, which is titled Requiring Medicare Prescription Drug Plans and MAPD Plans to Allow During the COVID-19 Emergency Periods for Refills and Fills of Covered Part D Drugs for Up to a 3-Month Supply. And this section allows for fills and refills of covered Part D drugs for up to 3-Month Supply, provided that there are no safety issues present. This covers Medicare Advantage plans and prescription drug plans. So that's Medicare Advantage plans are the MAPDs, and the prescription drug plans, PDPs. And it also lasts through the duration of the declared emergency period. Now, Section 3715, 3715, 3715, 3715. Why did I just say that 4 different ways? Because I'm cool. That's why. Anyways, this section is titled Providing Home and Community-Based Services in Acute Care Hospitals. Now, this section allows for Medicaid to pay for direct support professionals to provide resources that aren't duplicative or substituting for obligatory or necessary services. So, basically, professional services that aren't required and that aren't essentially being done somewhere else. And the idea here is to allow people to quickly get the services they need so that they can quickly get the hell out of the hospital, freeing up beds and potentially allowing the hospitals to cope with a larger patient base, a larger need for the beds that they have in them. So Section 3716, clarification regarding uninsured individuals. Now, this section provides more changes to the Families First Coronavirus Response Act. Well, not really changes, but more so clarifies the groupings a bit more. You see, when the Families First Act offered COVID-related vaccines and testings to uninsured individuals for free, it created a loophole that created a space where people that have insurance that doesn't cover COVID expenses could be charged for vaccines and testing. This section closes that loophole, making all people that don't have COVID-19 coverage eligible under the uninsured provisions of the Family First Act. And this is regardless of whether or not they actually have insurance. Now, Section 3717 is another clarification regarding the coverage of COVID-19 testing products. And like the previous section, it's a clarification from the First Families Act. It adds that testing products and tools need to be cleared, approved, or authorized by the FDA in order to be qualified for Medicaid or CHIP coverage. Now, Section 3718, amendments relating to reporting requirements with respect to clinical diagnostic laboratory tests. This section creates an exemption through the year 2021. So we're talking about it. The exemption lasts through 2021 until 2022, various parts in early 2022, to private sector laboratories from reporting requirements used to determine payment rates for tests under Medicare, and exempts laboratories from related payment reductions. And this gives a 1-year delay to the period where laboratories are required to report private payer data. I have said throughout this entire series, and I'm going to continue to say it, I do not like all of the reporting requirements that are being pushed back. All of the, you know, all of you don't have to report this. You don't have to follow this regulation. I don't like all of the stripping of the rules and regulations that are intended to make sure that people do the right thing. I just don't like it. Even if they're not intended to make sure people do the right thing, even if they're just intended to provide information, I don't like it when people are no longer required to present information or to keep, you know, to present records of what's been happening. I don't like all of this. I know we're in an emergency period, and I've said it the entire series. I know that we're in an emergency period, and you want to free people up and resources up and corporations up to make decisions and move quickly, but there's got to be a better way to do it than ripping the safeguards off of the system. Like, and in this case, I feel like we need to be more preventative in our focus. We need to spend more time thinking about how can we accommodate pandemics and things of that nature, any of the large scale scenarios that would cause us to want to take the safety rails off. How can we preempt those situations so that we don't have to remove the safety rails, so that the people are still safe? And it's not like nobody can sit here and say we didn't see the pandemic coming. Like, the governments, period, even local governments, all should have someone on staff, a whole team, in fact, of people on staff who their sole responsibility is thinking up worst case scenarios and coming up with plans to deal with them. Like, this is not rocket science. So I don't understand why we're not there yet, especially with all of these supposedly smart people that are in office, both elected and appointed. But I do think we need to get there, because this is not, it's not good that when we get in an emergency, we have to strip the rails off of the goddamn train tracks. So that things could move, instead of building in mechanisms and things of that nature that kind of preempt these situations. We should be in very, very, very dire straits before we start ripping off the guardrails, especially where it concerns healthcare and food and like the livelihood and the quality of life of people. I'm talking about on a survival basis, not on a nice to have basis, but on a need to have basis. And a lot of what we've been reading over the past 12 shows has been really like taking the guardrails off of food programs and healthcare programs and FDA requirements and CDC restrictions and things of that nature. That's not cool to me. EPA requirements, it's not cool to me at all. But anyways, dwelled on that long enough. So Section 3719, I believe that's what, yeah, we're on 3719. And this covers the expansion of the Medicare Hospital Accelerated Payment Program during the COVID-19 public health emergency. And this would expand for the duration of the COVID-19 emergency an existing Medicare Accelerated Payment Program. And so qualified facilities would be able to request up to 6 months advance lump sum or periodic payment. And this advance payment can be based on the net reimbursement represented by unbilled discharges or unpaid bills. Now, most hospital types could elect to receive up to 100% of the prior period payments, with critical access hospitals able to receive up to 125%. Qualifying hospitals would not be required to start paying down the loan for 4 months and will also have at least 12 months to complete repayment without a requirement to pay interest. And the Secretary of Health and Human Services also has the discretion to determine how this program will be carried out. And like so many of the other secretaries we've talked about thus far, we are really beginning to see the importance and the necessity of making sure that the secretary positions that are appointed by the president of the United States are competent people, because they have a lot of power, a lot of power. And this document is essentially giving them a lot more power. But We're going to move on to section 3720. And this section is basically, you know, it's titled the delay requirement for enhanced FMAP to FMAP to enable state legislation necessary for compliance. And this section allows states that raised premiums between the passing of the Families First Act and the CARES Act to still be eligible for FMAP increase of 6.2%. So FMAP stands for Federal Medical Assistance Percentages, and they're used to determine the matching funds rates allocated annually to certain medical and social programs. So this gives basically more resources to care facilities. Now, I really don't have too much of a problem with hospitals getting more money and resources being freed up for hospitals that need more money, or allowing them to maybe maneuver certain systems and mechanisms in certain ways so that they have more resources to be able to treat patients. But it doesn't seem significant when you look at the scope and the scale of what we're getting ready to potentially be dealing with. As I said before, this show and the last show, the numbers are spiking back up because states opened too early. People did not take this thing seriously. Nobody wanted to stay inside. Nobody wanted to self-quarantine. Nobody wanted to isolate. Nobody wanted to social distance. Nobody wanted to wear a mask. And I'm not saying nobody as in nobody in the whole country, but I'm saying nobody as in not enough people were willing to make themselves slightly uncomfortable in order to survive and in order to allow other people to survive. Because even if you're fine, who's to say that you don't get it and give it to somebody that could potentially die from it, that would die from it? Who's to say that, you know, that person doesn't end up being one of your loved ones, a mother, a child, a brother, a sister, an uncle, uncle, an auntie, a grandmother, a grandfather, any number of, you know, a best friend, a kid of a best friend, godchild, you know, any number of people that we all come into contact with, because humans have large social networks. Even if you think it's hogwash and it's BS, you know, what if you don't know what would happen if you caught it and you gave it to somebody, and heaven forbid, four or five members of your family or your inner circle died because you didn't want to be inconvenienced enough to stay in the house. And essentially, when I'm looking at all of these extra resources cleared up for the hospitals, the fact of the matter is our hospitals were already largely underfunded, largely underserviced. Our healthcare industry as a whole, the money is concentrated in the hands of the people who do not do the necessary work in order to provide an actual healthcare service. I'm looking at you, insurance industries. I'm looking at hospital administrators who don't do anything as far as providing service to the customers in the hospital, but they simply administrate and control an unjustifiably large portion of the resources that flow into a hospital. I'm looking at all of these scenarios and I'm thinking to myself, you know, them freeing up these extra resources is nice, but the system is fundamentally broken. It's not equipped to deal with what would and could potentially still be a massive surge of people needing hospital beds. And we've seen this happening all over the world. We're seeing it happen now in certain states. Nevada comes to mind. Arizona comes to mind. We're seeing it happen here and there slowly, but more and more frequently. And I'm worried that the pace of that is going to continue to pick up. And if people refuse to be inconvenienced enough to potentially save the life of other people, like even to that, you're not wearing the mask to protect you from other people. You're wearing the mask to protect other people from you. Like, it's not going to prevent you from getting it, but it could prevent you from spreading it. That's the whole purpose of the mask. But there are other things to go into that, you know, such as, you know, not putting yourself in a place to where you're creating plumes of potential coronavirus laden mist. You know, and it, I'm not trying to turn this into a show like that, but what I am saying is that this finance committee section, along with a lot of the other sections regarding healthcare individuals, is nice as well, is good, but it's simply not enough. There needs to be fundamental restructuring going on with America's healthcare system and with the way that hospitals are run and operated and the way that resources are allocated in hospitals. And there needs to be more thought given to the culture of America to not want to be inconvenienced, even if it would save the lives of other people. And this is the last thing I'm going to say, and then we're just going to get out of here. But it really makes you wonder. Well, that made me wonder, because I felt for a considerable amount of time now that human beings were not good entities. We're not good creatures. We're not the best example of the best of life. We are largely more selfish, more self-centered, more narcissistic than most other creatures that you'll see. Even to the point where we don't even want to be inconvenienced by our own children. You won't find very many other species out there that call themselves intelligent anyways, and I guess that narrows it down to just us. But anyways, I'm not going to get into that rant. That's a rant for another day. But I hope you enjoyed the show, and let me know what you think about it. I'll see you next week. This is Lessons from the screen.
John Boy.
So thank you guys for listening to the show, to the podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you always enjoy it. Remember, you can check out all of the shows. All of them are going to be only found on the Freedom Train Network. That's www.freedomtrainradio.com. And that goes, again, for all of the shows on the network. You can only find all of the shows available for all of the shows on the network on Freedom Train website, www.freedomtrainradio.com. So go there and check them out. You only get the latest 25 shows, I believe, on the podcast directories. So check us out. Show support for all of the shows we have. Shelby's World, Enigma, Self Hour, The Fix, Sports Podcast, Freedom Train Podcast Series, and all of the other shows that are around. Definitely go and show them love. As for this show in particular, you can check us out. Support us on Patreon.com. That's patreon.com/LFTS. That's patreon.com/LFTS. And there you can drop us. You can show support by sponsoring the show, giving us money every month, giving us money per episode, and just letting us know that you support us. And by doing such things, you allow us to be able to spend more time creating and composing the shows. Shows like this series and shows like a lot of the series that we do take a lot of time to put together. We're talking about hours upon hours upon hours of research, and it'd be nice to be able to take the time to do those shows and do them correctly the way we really want to do them, and also to be able to do them more frequently, because a lot of these shows should probably be done a lot more frequently. So love you. See you next week. Hope you have fun.